Bob Pompiani isn't a cardboard mannequin. He's a real man, and he's over on the South Side, and he's getting ready to introduce Mike Tomlin after pretty huge win, especially when you consider how the last week went. Probably the most tumultuous week of Tomlin's career. Here we go.
As always, I'll start with a quick review of our last performance. Certainly, it was a physical football game, and attrition was a component of it. I guess a component of reviewing it is to talk about some of that as we lead into this week. Calvin Anderson at tackle can be characterized as out again this week with his knee. Certainly, we have several guys in the concussion protocol. We'll let that process run its course, and the medical experts will be center stage in terms of determining the availability of those guys. Those guys are Pete, Malik Harrison, Darnell Washington. We have some other guys who got banged up during the course of play. Kendall Benton had an ankle. He was able to go back and finish. I'm sure that'll limit him some at the early portions of this week. James Pierre suffered a calf injury. He was able to finish, but it certainly could impact him at the early portions of this week. Ben Skoranek, Y.A. Black, and some others. Kyle Duggar certainly has got a chance this week to come back from his hand injury, and the rest are kind of bumps and bruises associated with play. Thankful that we have an additional 24 hours or so or plus this week, and that's why we adjusted our schedules in the way that we've done. Sometimes when we play on Monday, particularly at the early stages of team development, we'll do Friday twice and hit a lot of our situational football and really get solid on some of that stuff. We just deemed it appropriate to give ourselves another additional 24 hours of recovery this week. And so that's why we've taken the approach that we've taken this week. Thursday will be like a normal in-season Wednesday, and then we'll proceed on from there. And hopefully we'll get better clarity regarding some player availability. We'll give guys some additional time to rest and recuperate and be able to put their hand in the pile in terms of participating in the process of game readiness. And it's certainly important this time of year that we have that as the road gets narrow. Things that I thought were significant in terms of determining the outcome of the game on Sunday, I thought we were aggressive schematically on offense. And beyond that, though, we had the playmaking to go along with it. We were aggressive down the grass in some instances. I thought DK obviously was a central component of that, but so was guys like Calvin Austin. That was a big third down and three down the grass in the third quarter for him, and really was a whisker away from going 75 or so. We were able to hit Jaylen Warren out of the backfield versus some pressure on a third down play, and he was able to run it in from about roughly 40 yards out. And so we got some yards in chunks. That certainly aids execution. It flips the field, and oftentimes chunk plays are the central component of scoring drives, and certainly it was for us. We were able to put 7 points on the board our first possession of the game. We were able to put 3 points, I think, on the board the first possession of the second half and kind of go on from there. From a defensive perspective, I thought our third down play, particularly at the early stages of the game, sent a message and quelled the environment and allowed us to find our footing and play. Brandon Echols, I thought, was central to that. He broke up a pass in the red zone early in the game, made him settle for three on the first possession. He had a sack on the next third down on the subsequent drive. He had a third down coverage play, I think, on the next down. Largely, we did what we needed to do on third down in the first half of the game, and I thought it really set the stage for game on, if you will. We had a stop there at the end of the half, but we were penalized, and that was a 4-point penalty. They were able to go in and score a couple of plays later, and it also minimized our opportunity to maybe go back at them in a 2-minute drill prior to the half. And so certainly that was a costly penalty, but largely I thought third down in the first half really kind of set the stage from a competition standpoint, from a defensive perspective. And then certainly in the second half, man, standing up on the short field was big, making them settle for three or getting off. And I just think this time of year, that's where the game is played for offenses and for defenses. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention special teams. I thought we had some timely playmaking in that space. Guys like Ben Skoranek and Carson Bruner, man, really were productive. We talk about activity and productivity and it being a difference. And those are two guys, man, that have been highly productive at whooping blocks and making tackles in that space with a high level of consistency, and it was needed as you battle for blades of grass in the field position game in games like that. Largely, though, I liked everyone's smile in the face of adversity mentality. The environment was a tough and competitive one. Certainly, the Ravens are a worthy dance partner, and we were able to get the job done. Now, as we lean in on Monday Night Football, this week we're excited about Monday Night Football at Acrisure. Certainly, the Dolphins are as hot as any team in the NFL. I'll start first with their defense. If you look at these guys statistically over the last 5 weeks, man, they're tops in football. I think they're giving up 13.2 points per game over that span. Third down conversion rate is like at 31%. They've got 9 turnovers. I think that's second in football. And so there's some of the very critical statistics that measure how you're playing. They're checking those boxes, and that's why they've won. They've been the winners of 4 straight. When you keep the point total down, you take the ball away, you're good on third down. I think they're 22% TD rate in the red zone. And so they're stingy in that area as well. They're doing all the things you need to do to play really good defense. I love their linebacker tandem. Both highly productive instinct football players, volume tacklers. You better get hats on those guys if you want to make plays, not only in the running game, but just in the perimeter game, et cetera. Very active tandem. They leave them on the field quite a bit. They don't go to dime on third down and things of that nature like a lot of teams do this time of year. 20 and 25 are going to be in the middle of everything. I think they've been really solid in the secondary once they solidified some of their, you know, divisional labor. I think Minka has been significant in that regard. He's been playing nickel for them. And they've got more depth, certainly, at safety than they do at corner. And Minka's versatility has been an asset to him. He's done an awesome job as a guy that plays closer to the line of scrimmage in the nickel position, a guy that blitzes. Certainly in base, he plays free safety and is a hub of communication and center fielder back there for him there. They got 2 really good, solid veteran corners who do a nice job of keeping things in front of them. They're very aware and instinct players. Raul's been around a long time. Jones has been around a long time now. They're ball guys. You see it. They've taken the ball away. They hunt the ball via the turnovers and punching and raking at the football as a collective. It's really impressive. Really impressive by Bradley Chubb's efforts. You know, I think he missed a significant amount of time over the last year or two. He certainly appears to have found his footing. He's a challenge for us in terms of the edge rush, particularly with some instability that we have at tackle. It's going to be a challenge minimizing his impact on the game, but Chop is a designated rusher. Judon, they've got a quality edge group, and certainly they got some capable guys inside as well. On the offensive side of the ball, can't say enough about A-Chain and their running game and how they've been playing behind that over the course of the last month or so when they've been on that win streak. Even last week with Wright, they were able to do similar things that they've done. They've really anchored down and established a personality there. The offensive line is running off the ball. They're certainly capable of attacking you vertically down the field. Still, Waddle is a dangerous guy. He's capable of going over the top. He's capable of run after. Waller, in particular in the red zone, is a force to be reckoned with. He's a big-bodied guy. He's good along the end line and so forth in that space, and he's certainly been an asset to him over the second half of the year since his acquisition and activation, been a central component of what they do. They utilize a lot of people. They utilize a lot of personnel groups. They work to keep you off balance that way. They got a veteran offensive staff, know a lot of guys on the offensive side of the ball, and so certainly we'll be utilizing the additional time to prepare ourselves not only strategically, but also just getting really familiar with their personnel. It's been a number of years since we've seen these guys, and certainly I'll take the additional day to get familiar with that component of the matchup as well. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, you didn't mention Derek Harmon. Is he ready to go? And 2, why Black played more snaps than any defensive line? Where is he in his development? Harmon's?
Yes. Derek Harmon will be limited at the early portions of the week, and we'll let the amount of participation and how quickly it picks up and the quality of that participation as we go through the week to determine whether or not he's available. Certainly excited about an additional day as it pertains to him. YA is a guy that's just gotten better throughout the process, and sometimes, as I often say, one man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. We've certainly absorbed some attrition in the front with guys like Dean Lowry and Loudermilk going down on IR, Derek Harmon having two separate injuries. And so YA has been a guy, man, that's really taken advantage of the opportunities, not only in terms of his play, but just the general growth associated with gaining in-helmet snap experience. And so I think it's reasonable to expect him to continue to get better. He brings a good attitude. He is getting better from a production standpoint, and I just think last Sunday was a reflection of that.
Like the numbers you guys have in, against the run when Harmon's in versus whenever he's not in there are pretty, it's almost a 100-yard difference per game. What does Derek do so well that helps you guys defend the run better?
He's a first-rounder. That's why you draft first-rounders. He's really talented. But, you know, it's not a one-man gang, certainly. I knew we were in for a tough run day last week when Malik went down because that's also a component of his job description in terms of being a 9-on-7 run-stopping type linebacker for us. And so it's never a one-man discussion. Usually it's a multiple-man discussion, but certainly Harmon is an asset to us in that space.
Like you mentioned, Minka, how do you feel like you guys have done in terms of replacing him not only schematically but also leadership-wise?
You know, I don't think we're devoid of leadership by any means. Certainly, we've gone through some adjustments schematically in terms of how we divide the labor up, but it's not exclusive to him. I think the loss of D. Elliott has been a major component of that as well, and guys like Miles Killebrew. It's just the attrition component that's associated with football. But at the same time, that's why we're really excited about having Jalen Ramsey, man, with his position flexibility. His ability to play outside corner and nickel and safety. We envision that being a big-time asset to us in terms of keeping people off balance and from a matchup standpoint. In recent weeks, and I guess you could say month and some change, we haven't been afforded that because of some of the other things I mentioned, and we're thankful that he's been rock solid for us at safety as well.
Mike, I know DK wasn't able to travel back with you. Do you have an update on him?
He's moving in the right direction. I don't think it's going to jeopardize his availability at all, but it certainly may jeopardize his availability at the early portions of the week from a practice standpoint. But thankfully, he's fine. I'm appreciative of our medical staff and how quickly they acted in making sure that he was safe and taking care of him post-game.
Mike, you opened by talking about some of the explosive plays you were able to create in the passing game. What do you need to do from either a game planning or execution standpoint to replicate some of that going forward?
You know, both. It's a mentality thing, particularly as the road gets narrow, but also the schematics are a component of it. We knew we would have opportunities. We've just been in those circumstances with Baltimore so many times over the years, and I'm in the process of getting familiar with Miami and what that might look like this week.
What was the impact you think that Thielen and MBS had the receiving core?
You know, just veteran guys, been there, done that guys. As I mentioned, as the road gets narrow in December, it's good to have those guys in the fold, guys that have experience in rising up in those moments. And certainly statistics might not bear it out, but I thought they were an asset to us, and it's reasonable to expect that to improve and increase as we continue.
Mike, your record as a head coach the week after losing by 15-plus, Michael has this in the notes every week, is really good. Why do you think, in your 2-0 this year, why do you think you guys have consistently been able to respond after a really rough patch?
I just think that's what this business is about. It's week to week. There are going to be good weeks, and you can't wear your hand out patting yourself on the back when you have those good weeks, and you certainly can't hate yourself when you have those negative weeks. And as a leader, I think it's important that I show that steady presence to provide that compass, if you will, for the collective.
Mike, is that something that you've always done, dating back to your early days as a coach, or is that something that you kind of had to learn and adjust to?
I just think I understand my role as a leader, to be what my guys need me to be, and certainly When you're coming off a negative performance, they need stability and belief. You always say, what gives me confidence? And I tell you, life, ditto.
One thing that Johnny said yesterday, having played with Miami last year, he said they're particularly good at getting their fastbacks in space. From your standpoint, how do they do that? How do they manage that? And from your run game defense standpoint, how do you combat that?
You know, they're really good with their personnel groups. They'll go pony backs or two running backs in the game. They got a lot of pre-snap shifts and motions. They personnel you a lot. And so with some of those pre-snap movements, they gain an advantage on the edge from time to time. And they really do a nice job schematically. But as you mentioned, those running backs are dynamic. They're all, you know, a couple of them are sub 4.4, and you certainly see that in video.
How dynamic is Alex Highsmith and his ability to play the horizontal kind of football he did on the jet sweep and pop passes the Ravens try to get at you guys?
You know, that's why we like stand-up edge players. Their field of vision, their feel for the game is broader than DNs, and some of the things you mentioned I think is reflective of that, but I think that's not only characteristic of him. It's characteristic of all our edge guys, TJ, Herb, Jack Sawyer. That's the benefit to me of being a hybrid or a stand-up edge group.
Mike, going back to your wide receivers, what went into the decision to have Roman down versus Scotty being active?
You know, Scotty's a capable backup punt returner, and I thought that was the difference.
Mike, in terms of Skowronek and the special teams play, I mean, does it take a unique individual to be a gunner? Because we saw some of those where he was getting destroyed out there, the time he fought through it. I mean, did you notice that from him in L.A., or is that something he more developed here, you think?
Certainly I noticed it. He's a football player first and receiver second. He has an appetite and thirst for the competition the way that Darius Haywood Bay did when he was here. And certainly we're appreciative of not only his efforts, but also, as I mentioned, his production.
Does it say something that DK like basically volunteered himself to then go in and fill in late? And as a coach, when you got a guy that's as valuable in other areas of your team as that, was there any like, wait, what's Ford doing out there?
No, I just think that's what time of year it is. That's what type of game it was. I'm thankful for his efforts, but he wasn't the only one. Jaylen Warren, for example, returned kicks in the game. The road's getting narrow. It's AFC North football, et cetera. There are a lot of reasons why that type of attitude and approach was required.
DK said it felt different last week. The practices felt different. The details were different. What do you do as a coach to kind of get that out of them finally?
I'm sorry?
What do you do as a coach to kind of get that out of them finally at this point of the season?
I think we're always working to improve our process and thus our play. And certainly as you get into December, it's reasonable to expect your process to be cleaner, to continually elevate the floor in an effort to do so relative to your play.
Mike, you guys haven't been able to run the ball recently. What do you guys have to do better to get that going? And do you see any reliability from the deep passing game that was non-existent for a month and then flipped on this week?
You know, I'm comfortable with our approach to running the football. Certainly, we haven't gotten what we wanted from a production standpoint, but there's a lot of layers to that discussion. I thought particularly last week the loss of Darnell in game was significant in that regard and Pete at tackle. But that's just football. You adapt, you keep moving. Things are going to be less than ideal at times, particularly during this stage of the journey. I'm excited about putting together a good and complete plan and an effort to do so this week.
James Spears is one of the league leaders in yards allowed since he's been in the starting lineup. Can you explain how a guy goes from on the couch at the beginning of last season to 6 years into his career, somehow one of the best cornerbacks in the league?
Man, it's him. Ask any of his teammates. He has unwavering belief in himself. He's an unbelievable professional. He's tough-minded. He's physically tough. He's willing to do anything and everything. He's earned everything that he's gotten in this business. As I've mentioned in this setting before, you know, he was an undrafted college free agent in the COVID year. And so, man, you know, the tough road is not something that's new to him. I just think that he's played it up mentally, and I just think it's an asset to him and us.
Mike, you did the discount double check celebration after Aaron. And what's it like seeing him, A, have that rushing touchdown, have that celebration in 2025? Did you know he still had wheels like that?
You know, I don't want to make more out of it than should be. It's just fun. We were We went down the field and scored on the opening drive in a hostile environment, and that's what it was about.
It looked like he had one of his best games of the season on Sunday. Was there any indication in practice leading up to that week, or what do you think maybe was the difference for him?
You know, as I mentioned before, you do business with a guy like Aaron for environments like that in this time of year. He's a been there, done that guy. His resume reflects that. But beyond his resume, he's a competitor, and he's not running from it. He's running to it. And certainly that was a big game. And so I'm not surprised by big things from him.
Mike, you hit a third and moderate, I think it was third and five, to Calvin Austin in the second half from the 31-yarder down the sideline. Were you hunting for any more of those in the fourth quarter that just didn't manifest on those three possessions that, like...
Well, I don't know that I'm going to tell you my intentions. We got to play that group again here in a couple of weeks.
Can you do the things that you like to do with Darnell Washington in the game with other people, or is he so unique that you kind of have to scrap some of that stuff?
You certainly can, but there are weight classes in combat sports for a reason. And, you know, he's significantly bigger than others that you replace him with, and sometimes that's the difference.
Mike, you guys are 0-4 in games that kick off at 4:25 or later. Is there any explanation to that, or how do you kind of maybe break that streak this week?
I make no excuse.
Mike, you've had Dylan Cook for 3 or 4 years. What did you think? How do you think he handled his opportunity, and what's the comfort level if he's your guy going forward?
You're excited for a guy when he gets an opportunity to play. He certainly has worked hard and has been professional. I loved his mindset when he went in. Happy for him. Oftentimes, one man's misfortune is another man's opportunity, and he may get another opportunity this week. We'll see where the week leads us.
Mike, I think this is the third time in the last like 4 or 5 years that you guys have beaten the Ravens and they've outrushed you by like 100 yards or more. What goes into a game plan to mitigate that vast of a difference in the ground game?
You know, they're built different than a lot of teams, and so the nature of our matchups are different. You know, you can almost substitute their rushing yards for passing yards and vice versa. The bottom line is you better win the turnover game. You better be good in the red area. You better make timely situational plays, and, you know, that's kind of the formula for playing those guys from our perspective.
Mike, you said you understand your role as a head coach to when negative things happen. DK after the game said, Mike takes a lot of bullets for us. I'm curious, 19 years into does taking those bullets get wearying at any point for you?
It's the job.
Like one of those bullets was at the Bills game, fans calling for your job. Did you feel like you were in the hot seat at all last week?
Man, I've been in the hot seat for 19 years.
Did you feel like you had something to prove to the fans at all?
I always feel like I got something to prove, not necessarily to anyone in particular, but that's just the spirit in which I go about what I do professionally.
What do you expect from the fans Monday night?
Man, I expect them to show up, man. It's Monday Night Football in Akershire. It's going to be a big game.
Mike, can you clarify a little bit about what happened with DK after the game? We all met with him in the media room, and then all the reports came out last night.
He got hit in the abdomen or stomach in game. I think they gave him some basic over-the-counter remedies in-game, like Pepto or something like that, and it got probably progressively worse after the game, and so I'm appreciative of our medical experts. We just exercised an abundance of precaution. We didn't want to get him in the air without having a complete understanding about what he was dealing with, and they did a good job of that.
Mike, is there something to appreciate about Joey's, battling back from 2 penalties that he had early in the game, and then helps make a breakup unlikely at the end of the game, and keeping that sort of resilience in important moments?
Joey is always trying to make plays, and he certainly, being a Pittsburgh kid, understands the nature of Steelers Ravens. He always wants to be a Raven killer. He's made some plays against those guys in the past. He had a big interception against Odell Beckham as a rookie. He tackled Lamar, I think, on a 2-point conversion a year ago. I think that's just how he's wired.
A lot of what you talked about, Miami's secondary, certainly manifested on the stat sheet last week. They're going up against a 24-year-old quarterback. Obviously, difference from you guys and the veteran leadership that you have there. But like their aggressiveness, their break on the ball, that sort of thing, is that some of that painting a picture of them throughout the whole season, or was that specific more to going up against New York last week?
I think that's reflective of who they are after they found their footing. Certainly, they've absorbed some attrition, particularly at the cornerback position. Juju, Brents, and others have been injured, but I think they've settled into that veteran tandem. As I've mentioned, solidifying Mika as a nickel and utilizing their safety depth and getting stability there. What they've done over the last 5 weeks is kind of reflective of where they are. But I'll let them speak to that. I'm just, you know, viewing it from an outsider's perspective.
Mike, I'm sure you liked the three-step catch rule on Sunday, but in general, as a member of the committee, the competition committee, do you like that?
You know, it's always been debatable. It seems like I've just learned to kind of move on, to be quite honest with you. I moved on from Jesse James, for example. I don't even know what year that was. There are going to be controversial calls in big games. I think I always focus my energy on making enough plays to minimize that in terms of determining the outcome of the game. That's why you won't hear me calling New York post-game for explanations and things of that nature. You guys asked me that maybe earlier in the year regarding something. It's not going to change the outcome. I just work to keep moving, and I just like to put together a comprehensive enough plan and make enough plays where the game's outcome doesn't hinge on one play or a couple of plays.
You have a pretty good feel for what a catch is and what a catch isn't.
I do.
Do you worry when you see the results on Sunday, though? I mean, when you have to make the scoring plays one thing, but the thing, but is it difficult to, how do you process information? Who do you rely on to say, hey, we should challenge this or not?
I just think that football is so bang bang and exciting. I think that's why our fans love it. It's a difficult game to play because of the speed. It's a difficult game to officiate. I think as a collective, we have some things in place that kind of, you know, protect us all in an effort to get things right. Ruling that catch a touchdown makes it automatically reviewable where I don't have to decide to challenge, et cetera. And so there's a lot of things in place, interrelated variables relative to that discussion.
Going through four left tackles in three games, what kind of stress does that place on an offense? And how, does having Isaac there, a veteran like that, next to that position help mitigate that?
You know, I don't know that Isaac is blocking any of those edge guys, but certainly from a communication and coordination perspective, his presence is helpful. It's been a challenge, but that's why we work hard at making sure that we prepare the collective. It's next man up for us, and not only at that position, but others, you get a chance to prove that over the course of the journey. And certainly we've been challenged in that space in recent weeks. Can't say enough about those guys. I think we largely kept Aaron clean in game, and it's a credit to those guys.
Cam is about 70% snaps as an interior defensive lineman. At 36 years old, those things don't happen in the league, maybe ever. How do you explain that he's able to do that at this age?
He's an outlier. There are some outliers in every discussion. And guys like he and Calais Campbell, for example, are outliers.
Mike, you have a 42-year-old quarterback. Can a 44-year-old who hasn't played in 5 years come back and play? Philip Rivers?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Colt was supposed to work him out.
That's none of my business, man.
I'm trying to get ready for the Dolphins.
When you talk about Cam, was it fair to say that the attrition, he's played more than you planned on or expected him to in terms of the snap share? And the...
We do what we got to do. He certainly does what he has to do, man. He is a quality leader in every way. And I think certainly he understands our collective circumstance at times, and he's always willing to do whatever he needs to do to help us win.
With the left tackle situation being what it is, it's kind of forgotten the three. Your three linemen from the center out are second-year guys, and you've kind of, have they been taking that second-year step collectively as you?
They have, and they have in a big way. To be honest with you, I don't even really think about it. But we invested a lot of draft capital in those guys, man. I'm not surprised that they're capable players and that they're emerging and as individuals and a collective, and I think it's reasonable to expect that to continue.
Mike, you're probably deeper at linebacker than you have been in quite some time. How much did that come into play on Sunday, and how important is that going to be down the stretch?
It was certainly needed. I'm appreciative of Cole Holcomb's contributions, and as I mentioned, man, Malik has a certain job description for us, and when he went down, I thought Cole did a nice job. But depth is big, certainly at the linebacker position, and we're continually working, not only in terms of the acquisition of players, but the development of players as well. Oftentimes, guys make plays in special teams before they make plays on defense, and one of the guys I mentioned as a special team highlight for us was young Carson Bruner, and so he's in the hopper as well.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Very interesting. Might that have been a little shot at the Ravens there at one point, Limits? Please allow me to explain.
Yes, please.
He was asked about refereeing, officiating, and he said, you know, I move on from these things. That's why you won't hear me calling New York for explanations and things of that nature. Well, guess who called New York yesterday, oh limitless wonder?
Mr. John Harbaugh.
You're right about that. John Harbaugh and GM Eric DaCosta requested and got a phone call with the league. They spoke to Perry Fuel, the NFL's senior vice president of officiating and administration, and Walt Anderson. So that's unusual to get like an official conference call with the league. I don't know. Maybe Tomlin didn't know about that. He didn't even know about Phil Rivers trying out as a 44-year-old. He sure knew about Joe Flacco earlier this year. He didn't say that was none of my business, did he?
To me. To be honest, it was shocking to me. Andrew Berry must be a lot smarter than me or us. because it doesn't make sense to me to trade a quarterback that you think enough of to make your opening day starter to a division opponent that's hurting in that area. But that's just my personal feelings. It certainly made sense from Cincinnati's perspective.
That was one of his great answers of all time. And that's why it was so shocking at the time when the Bengals got Flacco, that when he was asked about it, he didn't give the answer he always gives, which was the one today when they asked about Rivers. He said, it's none of my business. I'm getting ready for Miami. So that was good. It was sort of a dull news conference right up to the point, I thought, where the gravedigger came in, Limits, and I believed said something to the effect of, Mike, your players mentioned that, you know, that you've taken bullets for them. Does that ever get, you know, do you ever get weary of that? And he said, it's the job. And then I think Brooke Pryor or somebody else came in, Limits, with a couple more questions about the heat that Tomlin has been facing.
Yeah, I think it was Ashley Loyotis from TAE.
Like, one of those bullets was at the Bills game, fans calling for your job. Did you feel like you were in the hot seat at all last week?
Man, I've been in the hot seat for 19 years.
Did you feel like you had something to prove to the fans at all?
I always feel like I got something to prove, not necessarily to anyone in particular, but that's just the spirit in which I go about what I do professionally.
I love the answers, and I love the questions by Ashley there. Love the questions. Just, you know, respectful, and that's kind of been a big part of the story this week. We mentioned it going into the news conference, that was probably the most tumultuous game week of Mike Tomlin's entire tenure. Coming off a home game where fans were chanting for his job. And so that kind of needs to be asked when you have a week of redemption against the Ravens. And that was the first time in the whole news conference today that Tomlin, you know, really piped up and showed some emotion. And I liked it. I liked the back and forth there. Limits, can I hear that again? Both those questions. The first one was, you know, is one of those things, one of those bullets you take for the team, coming from fans chanting for you, and do you feel like you're on the hot seat?
Like, one of those bullets was at the Bills game, fans calling for your job. Did you feel like you were in the hot seat at all last week?
Man, I've been in the hot seat for 19 years.
Did you feel like you had something to prove to the fans at all?
I always feel like I got something to prove, not necessarily to anyone in particular, but that's just the spirit in which I go about what I do professionally.
I like it. Things piped up at the end. I found that quite entertaining. And then maybe not. They're a shot at the Ravens. We talked about Cam Hayward. I think he's having a pretty good year. Not as splashy as last year. He also gets a hell of a lot of attention on that defensive line. And I think he's mostly played well. Yes, their run numbers have been ugly. I'm just not sure he's the reason for that. I think they focus on him and don't worry about other people so much. What stood out to you, oh limitless wonder?
Yeah, I think that was one that definitely did. I also thought that it was fascinating how much that Tomlin glowed about Minka and how he's played with the Dolphins. That was something I didn't necessarily expect.
I think they've been really solid in the secondary once they solidified some of their, you know, divisional labor. And I think Minka has been significant in that regard. He's been playing nickel for them. And they've got more depth, certainly, at safety than they do at corner. and Minka's versatility has been an asset to him. He's done an awesome job as a guy that plays closer to the line of scrimmage in the nickel position, a guy that blitzes. Certainly in base, he plays free safety and is a hub of communication and center fielder back there for him there.
Good stuff that was, and I think Minka's come on this year of late, and that's going to be interesting because Minka, my experience watching Minka, and I in particular remember Tyler Boyd accusing the Steelers of quitting at one point, and Minka laid the lumber to Tyler Boyd in the next game, as I recall, maybe to the point of a personal foul. I think he's going to come out with a bit of an edge. Did we find the mongoose, and is he on YouTube?
There he is.
He seems angry or perhaps reserved. Are you sitting in front of a map today, Brian?
Yeah, I didn't go with the library backdrop today because, well, for reasons. But yeah, I got a map behind me and pins on the places that I've been. Oh.
Tell us about that, please, before we get into Tomlin. Where have you been? What's the most unusual? Look at that. What's the most unusual place you've been? And do you have a goal of getting to a certain place or 10?
No goals. There shouldn't be one on Algeria. I don't know what happened there. I've never been. I'd like to do a little more international travel, clearly. This job and covering Pitt previously has taken me through a decent amount of the U.S. I did think about this, though, going to Baltimore yesterday for the whatever seventh time, you know, on the beat. Like, I'd like to try to see every NFL stadium while I'm doing this job. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be. That'd be great. Would you like to take a trip?
There'll be a new one next year.
I want to take a trip in honor of my dad to the Santiago de Compostela. It's a trail. I think it's like 500 miles. It goes from France all the way through Spain, I believe. Woman on the plane was telling me about this that I met randomly going on a college visit with my daughter recently. Then my dad passed. And then the story is that he took me on that trail a long time ago, but only for a very tiny portion of it. And I think that he wanted to go back. So I want to go back and walk the thing in his honor. And she said it took her 45 days. I don't know if I can make the whole thing, Brian, but that'd be great. If you could come with me and do a little portion of the trail, we could do that. Visit France, visit Spain.
Well, you better start getting back out there to pick up hoops with us so that you can get in the proper shape to make that lengthy walk, Joe.
I might have to. It's like 15 miles a day. How long would it take you to walk 400 or 500 miles, oh, limitless wonder?
15 miles a day?
Yeah,
that's
or
a lot
10.
Of walking.
I know, but that's all you're doing. You wake up, you have breakfast, you walk.
Are your boots made for walking?
I hope so. All right, Brian.
I don't think I could do that. I'm not at, like, I've never been someone who wants to run a marathon just to see if I can. Like, I just don't really think the human body is meant to do it, but obviously that's why some people enjoy it. They get a rise out of defying the human body.
Well, my daughter-in-law just ran a marathon, and is she a daughter-in-law? Yeah, I guess. Wait a second. Is my nephew, what is my nephew's wife to me?
Your niece.
My niece, she's a niece?
Niece, I mean niece-in-law, but no one says
a
that.
A niece-in-law. Is that right,
No one
limits?
Says that. Yeah, but nobody says that.
I think they sponsor this show, Niece on Law.
Well, whoever she is, she ran a marathon recently, and I asked her about the training. And she never ran an actual marathon in training for the marathon. Have you heard about that, Brian? You get close and then you actually just do it that day. Is that the way to do it?
I think that is what most people do. You're supposed to, you know, stretch out your runs, but you never go quite to 26, 22, because I think the logic there is adrenaline will get you over the hump that you need on the day of the race. You don't want to kill yourself before that. There is a good bit in the show, How I Met Your Mother, where Barney Stinson, the character, is insisting that he can run a marathon without training. And he's like, step one, start running. There is literally no step two. So I like that mentality.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's putting yourself out there. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. What stood out about Tomlin to you today, oh, Batconian mongoose?
I think some of the questions were more entertaining than the answers. I think Tomlin is in it's December mode. I'm keeping it as brief and basic as I possibly can. And we just want to get through this 30-minute endeavor so that I can get back to watching film and apparently not even being aware that Philip Rivers could be returning to the NFL, which I guess I believe him because he's so...
I do believe him, yeah.
He's so laser-focused. However, though, like, there is a TV that you walk past every morning when you get to the Steelers facility, but maybe he just makes a left turn right up the stairs and doesn't even look at what's being discussed on First Take or FS1 or NFL Network or whatever they have on there when he gets there.
And fellas, it is official. According to Adam Schefter, the Colts are signing 44-year-old Philip Rivers to their practice squad. How is this going to work?
That is incredible, Brian.
Can 44-year-old Philip Rivers still play, Brian? This is insane.
I have no idea, but Steve Wyche from, I think, NFL Network had an interesting tweet that I read before I fell asleep last night at halftime of the Eagles-Chargers game that apparently something with Hall of Fame voting guidelines, his clock would reset if he returns to their active roster, but it doesn't if he's only on the practice squad. So, I mean, if you can only be elevated three times and there are four games left. So, I mean, something would have to give there, but maybe that means he's not going to play this week and then he gets elevated for the last three. And then he does the Miles Jack Eric Rowe and never actually leaves the practice squad, but stays with them in the playoffs should they make it.
So Rivers could technically play three games, being called up from the practice squad, and still go into the Hall of Fame next year or whenever, and it wouldn't matter.
I think so. I think that is what Steve Wyche reported. So that is just one fascinating wrinkle to an obviously fascinating development. It's funny because how many times did like you or me or Joe or Pony or Mueller come on the station and say, Ben looks good. I think he could still play. Steelers, give him a call. And that is exactly what is going on with Indy and Phil Rivers.
And that is going to be a sight, man. It sounds like he will, unless he totally flops. He's going to be their starter.
26 modern era semifinalists right now for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He really could get into the Hall of Fame while playing in the NFL just a couple of months earlier.
This is Incrinculant. For one night only, Wednesday, December 17th, our Odyssey Pittsburgh stations, The Fan, 100.1 FM, AM 1020 KDK, 100.7 The Star, WAMO 107.3, and Y108 will be flipping the turntables, turning Mike's Beer Bar into the biggest Christmas karaoke spot on the North Shore. Our hosts, local celebrities, take the mic for celebrity karaoke. No admission. Bring canned food donations to support North Hills Cares. Details at 93.7thefan.com. Partly cloudy today, high 34. AJ Burnett, low of Nick Bonino, 13. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Another minute or two with the mongoose. He did pipe up a little bit, Tomlin did. At least, you know, the tenor of the news conference got a little more interesting when he was asked about, I think Will Graves said, you know, taking bullets for the team. That's the way DK Metcalf put it after the game. And was it Ashley Liotis who followed up on that? Here's a little back and forth there, Brian.
Like, one of those bullets was at the Bills game, fans calling for your job. Did you feel like you were in the hot seat at all last week?
Man, I've been in the hot seat for 19 years.
Did you feel like you had something to prove to the fans at all?
I always feel like I got something to prove, not necessarily to anyone in particular, but that's just the spirit in which I go about what I do professionally.
Thoughts?
And then there was another follow-up about what he expects Monday night, which I thought was a good one. And
yeah,
he said he expects people to show up and, you know, basically be a good crowd, I guess. So, yeah, that's why I said when you first brought me on here that I thought the questions were better than sort of the run-of-the-mill Tomlin answers. He's said variants of these over the years. I think it was more so in years past after playoff debacles when we asked him about his job security, and he said he always feels like he's coaching for his job because that's the standard, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's a good way to handle these questions. As I said last week, you never have to worry about how Tomlin's going to respond to those types of questions. But in fairness, you could probably make the case that it's a lot easier to respond to those questions when you do feel like you have the utmost job security and your boss is on record as saying he only evaluates you and that he's glad you're his coach.
Anything else stand out injury-wise or talking about Minka a little bit? What do you got?
Roman Wilson was inactive because they needed that backup punt returner in Scotty Miller. Really covering all the bases there, I guess. If something would have happened to Calvin Austin III, they needed to make sure Scotty Miller was there to be the backup punt returner. No one else could have stood back there and called a fair catch. Roman couldn't have done it. Kenny Gainwell couldn't have done it. Adam Thielen couldn't have done it, despite his loads of professionalism, which was so evident in that game. So that was an indictment of Roman Wilson. It had to be taken that way, that he's in someone's doghouse, whether it's Tomlin's, Aaron's, Arthur Smith's, or some combination of the three. That's just not a good look. That is not good optics for the development of a third rounder in his second season.
Oh, there was one other thing, Brian. We're talking to Brian Bacco of the Post-Gazette. Read his stuff at postgazette.com. I don't know if he was taking a shot at the Ravens here or not, but when he was asked about, you know, the likely play, some of the officiating, he's on the competition committee, thoughts, blah, blah, blah. He said, I've learned to move on. I moved on from Jesse James, for example. And then he said, you won't hear me calling New York for explanations and things of that nature. Well, guess who called New York yesterday, Brian? John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta. That's who, to get explanations and things of that nature. Shot or no shot?
Yeah. I tend to think it was. Although, I guess, going off the Philip Rivers answer, Mike Tomlin has no idea that happened. So maybe it was just pure coincidence. I'd have to go back and look to see if he's ever made a comment on a Tuesday about, you know, yeah, we sought clarification or whatever. Over 19 years, I feel like it's had to have happened at some point. But I agree with him that, yeah, you do move on. And, you know, if you're the Ravens, maybe you feel like the rule went against you, but oh, here's the thing. Isaiah Likely, just protect the ball, you know, finish the play a little better. John Harbaugh did say that when he was asked about it. He said they don't teach that in those situations. And, you know, this other thing, I mean, people are crushing the refs for the call on Christian Kuntz, which probably was a bad call, contacting the snapper. And the narrative out there, not even just from Baltimore, but national people too, is, the refs gave the Steelers a touchdown instead of a field goal. Last time I checked, they did not escort Gainwell into the end zone on the following play. The Ravens defense still could have stiffened up and gotten a stop there. So I hate complaining about the refs, whether it's from the Steelers side or the other team's side. I really do.
I like it. And
I know you do. We sometimes fight over that.
I know. I think we did last week. And now I've completely forgotten what I was going to ask you about next. There was the Likely play. There was Philip Rivers. There was the Rodgers play. Oh, there was Tomlin saying of the Phil Rivers thing, that's none of my business. I thought for sure that's what he would say all those weeks ago when he was asked about Joe Flacco, but that's not what he said, did he?
What if he would have been like, what, Flacco wasn't available? Andrew Berry didn't want to send him Flacco?
That would have been great. I mean, he says that about any time he's asked about like a league issue or a player on another team. But the fact that he piped up that day and ripped Andrew Berry was one of the all-time great Tomlin press conference moments. Was it not, Mongoose?
And they got to see Andrew Berry and his squad of rowdy Titans losers again in a few weeks. So, but this time with 100% more Shador and 100% less Dylan Gabriel, unless there's an injury. So that absolutely adds some intrigue to Steelers-Browns. Not as good as if it would have been Steelers versus Kenny Pickett, but we'll see if Shador makes it seem like Andrew Berry is a lot smarter than me or us if he can go out there and beat the Steelers in Cleveland.
30 seconds. Who would be the best opponent for the Steelers? In other words, the team you'd like to play the most because you feel you could win. The Bills, Jags, Texans, and who's the fourth one limits that's possible?
Chargers.
Yeah.
Probably the Jaguars. To be honest, I don't even know what's going on down in Jacksonville, except they just win every week. I don't think I've watched a single snap of Jaguars football. I don't know if Trevor Lawrence is playing great or just getting a little lucky, but having them come up north and knowing that they've had a pretty weak schedule. I mean, they beat the Chiefs, they beat the Chargers, but I'd just go with Jacksonville. I don't know if I'm buying them with the Chargers a close second.
I agree wholeheartedly. Thank you, Mongoose.
Chargers killed the Steelers, but Justin Herbert seems to get destroyed every week. So maybe that would play into their hands. Thanks, guys. Goodbye.
See you, buddy.